It's an emergency episode of the Pac-12 Apostles. We have a new commissioner, George Kilikoff, president of entertainment and sports at MGM Resorts. He's the new commissioner. Larry Scott's tenure is officially over. And we teased it on Twitter. We are going to tell you guys how the Pac-12 Apostles figured out how the who the commissioner was going to be before the AP broke it, before Wilner, before Canzano, before anybody else, Bruce Feldman, anybody. We'll tell you how we came up with it and how we knew. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles. You guys can always shoot us an email. I'm Matt, I-M-M-A-D, at unafraidshow.com. You can shoot us a text, 818-293-7547. And of course, leave a review and leave a rating so we can read them on here. It's one of our favorite things to do. And of course, we will get back to answering all your emails next episode, because this is clearly an emergency episode. It's not for that, people. So Ralph, when you found, so we knew that this news was going to be breaking at some point in time soon, but the fact that we heard that there was going to be a press conference, were you surprised that the name hadn't leaked earlier? Because we had seen names like Oliver Luck, Freer from Hulu, who I was a big fan of, the potential for there being it being two jobs instead of one job, which I floated out there. Were you surprised that it hadn't broken earlier than, you know, that the conference had been so tight-lipped about it?
Definitely, because everything leaks. Everybody kind of has their guys. I remember for the longest time when I was covering Arizona State, anytime Todd Graham wanted to get anything out there, or the Graham staff, or the Arizona State Sports Information Department, they would go through Pete Thamel of Sports Illustrated. Like, you had like 18 people dedicated to covering Arizona State sports, and Pete Thamel, who pays zero attention to anything locally unless it's time to break news, would always have the information. And so, you know, you figure, and we know for a fact that all of these people have really close-knit relationships with Bruce Feldman. On this podcast, I've gone through before. And if you just look up Bruce Feldman's mentions of the Pac-12 head coaches as they're about to be hired or during the hire, he always says nice things. And then he always kind of gets the exclusive to do a deep dive on profiling these coaches. And so, you know, you'd figure then you have, you know, John Canzano and John Wilner who cover the conference extensively. And then you have some other people who are plugged in. And the thought was that, you know, maybe somebody would know something, because the same five or six names that kept coming up were one by one over time just turning the job down, until finally, I think in the last 2 days, Oliver Luck and Gene Smith, which were probably clubhouse leaders for a lot of people, became definite no's.
Ralph,
yeah, it's...
Yeah, but you know what this is, Ralph.
What?
This is just like when anybody else gets hired. They got their first, they got the only person who they offered the job to is the person who took it. You know that. They didn't offer Oliver Luck. They didn't offer Freer from Hulu. They didn't offer, you know, Greg Burns from Alabama. They didn't offer any of those people. They got their man, the man that they wanted from the beginning, Ralph.
Right. I mean, I don't corporate. I don't spend. And I mean, anytime any company is saying anything, especially when they're introducing a person or a product, I try to ignore the like 50,000 buzzwords that you see in any of those circumstances and just get right to the heart of like, okay, what is this person's background and what are they saying publicly? And that's why it's important to have a decent media base to be able to come in and ask very important questions. And with Larry Scott, it just got exhausting because I would go to the Pac-12 Media Day year after year, and the media members would just be beat down by about the sixth year of having to ask questions about, you know, are you going to get a relationship with DirecTV? It was like, I mean, nobody even wanted to ask. Maybe one person would. Whereas, like, if this was, you know, a New York Giants press conference and they called an ill-advised timeout, 13 different people from the Daily News and the Post and the Athletic and then, you know, 14 other publications would follow up with, what about that timeout? What about that timeout? What about that timeout? Like, West Coast media has a reputation of being soft, but, like, I think West Coast media understands when something is corporate speak and it's just completely pointless. And one of the things that Larry Scott did was absolutely beat the life out of West Coast media. People who weren't even really paying all that close attention to the Pac-12 in the first place, because the product hasn't been all that great. But when they did pay attention, they would just get absolute corporate speak drivel from a man who very clearly did not have the right answers, but thought that if he talked long enough, he could get away with it. And, you know, so the whole thing of,
but didn't he get away with it to the tune of what, like over $20 million?
He was cashing checks, but do you know a single, I mean, like, I would think that in any other circumstance, John Canzano and John Wilner and even you and I would be judging somebody on the merits of what they bring to the table in the conference. But like for the last 3 years of Larry Scott, it was like we would start off and be like, hey, guess what this asshole did? Like it was just like the level of jadedness was, it was really extreme. He had no credibility. He had like a couple of power broker defenders, right? He had Michael Crow, which is really interesting that Arizona State University just posted a photo with new Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov and Ray Anderson and Michael Crow all standing together, unified, because Michael Crow was a big reason why Larry Scott wasn't fired 4 years ago. Because he had a lot of power in the process and was an avid defender of keeping Larry Scott on board and trying to paint anybody who thought otherwise as an idiot. I don't know, man. We're really beating around the bush here, though. Let's get into the good stuff, because this is what people want to hear. Let's go back, George, to this morning when you picked up the phone and called me knowing that there was going to be a press conference in 2 hours.
Okay. Before we even do that, I want to answer a question real quick, which is, and then we will get into how the news was broken before the AP, before anybody else, the Pac-12 apostles knew who your new commissioner was going to be. And it was tweeted out. So, Route, how important do you think that this commissioner hire was? Like, did the fate of the Pac-12 universe rest on this hire? I believe it did. I believe the total existence of the conference as a Power Five and ability to win championships and all that rested on this hire.
I'm with you. And I don't want to get unnecessarily political on this show. There's no reason to, but I want to draw some comparison. Somebody tweeted something today that that basically said, like, there's this congresswoman from Georgia. Her name is Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she has done a lot of like really weird look at me antics things. She bought into QAnon super hard. She's bought into a bunch of conspiracy theories. She's made a spectacle. She's yelled at people in public. She has drawn a bunch of attention to herself. She's done some really weird stuff, right? Regardless of party, not bringing up any policy issues to keep herself in the news, she's done a lot of really weird things. And somebody tweeted something earlier today that really made me think of the Pac-12. They said, like, this woman has done stuff that would get her kicked out of a Chuck E. Cheese, and we still can't kick her out of Congress. And I was thinking about it, and it was like, Larry Scott was so bad for so long, and everyone knew it. It was common knowledge that he not only did not complete the majority of his objectives, but it was numerically quantifiable that the Pac-12 had fallen behind in recruiting metrics, in financials, in overall success of the conference. We just had a basketball tournament in which Larry Scott lost the credibility for the Pac-12, as well as the benefit of the doubt. So there's always going to be a bias toward things that happen on the West Coast. And I'm, now that I'm an East Coast resident, I'm starting to understand it. But the thing that used to balance out the East Coast bias was the benefit of the doubt, that the Pac-12 was a Power Five conference. Larry Scott's management cost the Pac-12 the benefit of the doubt. And the Pac-12, at least in men's basketball, ended up having to have success from super low seeds all the way across the board because they had lost that benefit of the doubt. Like, it's on almost every measurable, Larry Scott was failing miserably, and not one damn thing was done about it. And so that brings me back around to be able to answer your question. We have a lot of people in this country in positions of influence and positions of power who aren't facing any type of accountability whatsoever for the fact that they aren't doing their job correctly. Yep. And it's extremely frustrating for the person who shows up 15 minutes late to work at a QT gas station and their ass gets kicked to the curb, right? Because that's a QT gas station and they could use a second chance. Meanwhile, you have somebody completely ruining an entire conference and operating it in such a way that the entire conference has completely lost respect, and you don't have any consequences for that. And so that brings me to my answer to your question, George. This is the most important possible hire in all of college football right now, because it matters to all of college football, not just the Pac-12, that the product is good, that the product is visible, that college football as a brand is strong and forward thinking. Because at the end of the day, the one thing that Larry Scott taught us is if George Kliavkov fucks this up, there's not going to be any consequences except for the results.
Yes, dude. That means that you will either be to the point where the top teams have to leave the conference, or they're no longer, you know, or they're no longer relevant. I mean, imagine, like, if you look at what Mario Cristobal is doing on the recruiting trail, and imagine if there are no results for that. Like, if that just stops because you can't win a championship and all of this, that would be a disaster, dude. That, I mean, and the same thing for USC fans. They want to see something different with Clay Helton. Like, if then you won't be able to hire a top tier, a proven top tier head coach, you will always be speculating, right? If you're USC, because you'll be in a conference where people will be like, okay, well, you can't win there. And it's hard to recruit, even in a fertile recruiting ground like LA. But now it is time, though. It is time for the truth, the big reveal of how the Pac-12 apostles scooped everybody as far as the Pac-12 commissioner, George Kliavkov. And mind you, let's read a couple of the Wilner tweets, because this is very important when it comes to it. Because if you go back, you heard that, okay, Oliver Luck is out of the hot board search. Big name in the box, 2 out of 3. Who, from where, 2 out of 5. And you're just like, okay. Then he says that, what did he say, that 90? Oh, so I tweeted at him. I said, if it ain't Randy Freer, I'm nervous. And then he said, it's not Freer. And then he tweeted out, and I was like, hold up. Then he said, Pac-12 fans, and mind you, we were already in the process of figuring out who it was. By the time I tweeted Randy Freer at 8:49 this morning, we had already figured it out at that point in time. And then John Wilner tweeted out, Pac-12 fans better hope the president's put as much energy into making the smart decision as they have into keeping a secret. Then the next tweet, which is very important. There's a 99% chance that nobody in college sports has ever heard of the next Pac-12 commissioner, according to his source. And then he comes back and says, I figured out the ID of the next Pac-12 commission, but I am so shocked that quadruple confirmation is required to make sure I'm not being set up. We already knew at that point in time, because I tweeted immediately. I quote tweeted John Wilner there. And I said,
which tweet did you quote tweet?
Oh,
you can establish that it was before John Wilner said,
he had
found out who it was.
Yeah. This is the timestamp thing. So, and I made sure to tell people, check the timestamp. So at exactly 9:26 a.m. So an hour and 34 minutes before the press conference, and like, what was it, like 40 minutes, 30,
45, I think like 45 minutes before Ralph Russo at the AP tweeted out who the commissioner was going to be.
Yes. At that point in time, that's when I responded to that tweet and I said, possible Pac-12 commissioner name that we haven't heard yet is George Kilikoff, president of entertainment and sports at MGM Resorts. Hashtag just a guess. Winky face. And people were like, yo, did he really do this? And here is the truth. I work with a warlock. I work with a warlock slash witch named Ralph Amsden. And if Ralph's superpower is finding out information that nobody is supposed to know. And
without sources.
And that's the totally
important to throw in there, without sources.
And he did this without one single solitary source. Ralph figured it out, and Ralph was like, yo, George, what do you think about this? He laid out the whole scenario for me, how he figured it out. And I said, all right, I'm cool. I trust you and I know your abilities. And this all makes so much sense. I will tweet it out because that's how much I trust you, Ralph, and your investigation skills. And so Ralph deserves a big pat on the back. He deserves something good to happen to him in this house right now for figuring this out. Great job, Ralph. Kudos to you, buddy. High five.
Well, I want to go back to the point, and I don't want to give away too many trade secrets because this is something that I've actually done a few times. Like, if you go back to, you remember the,
Cause we can't give away all the sauce. We can't give away the secret sauce, buddy.
If you go back to the American Alliance of Football, when they were announcing their team names and coaches the day before the Arizona Hotshots named Rick Neuheisel their head coach, I said, the Arizona franchise should be called the Hotshots and they should hire Rick Neuheisel. I already knew those two things are going to happen. And if you know where to look for certain things online, like you can, and you use deductive reasoning, you can figure some stuff out. This was a really weird one because you called me. I think we all started seeing all the alerts. So like, hey, the Pac-12 is going to have a press conference. I was on a business call with somebody from my hometown in Wyoming, and I saw that you were calling, and I was like, oh, I know what he wants to talk about. And when I answered the phone, you said, what are you up to? And what did I tell you?
Oh, figuring out who the next commissioner is?
Yeah, I said, I'm trying to figure out who the next commissioner is. You said, oh, of course you are. And I was like, okay, give me a minute, because I think there's a couple, and it wasn't just one name. I said, I think there's a couple of names here that I uncovered that are really, really outside the box, but they might, if they're really saying that Oliver Luck dropped out, if Gene Smith dropped out, And it hasn't leaked yet. If it hasn't leaked yet, then it's got to be somebody outside the industry.
Yes.
I floated the other idea, which was, or it has to be internal.
Yeah.
And you told me, no way.
No way. No way. I was like, you can't hire somebody who was there when the crime was committed and expect there not to be a mutiny. I was like, there's no way that the presidents and chancellors could be this incompetent. And I'm not saying that Merton Haynes is going to be bad at his job or anything like that. However, you cannot bring somebody, like if you're looking for change, you can't hire somebody from within when the mess is so broken and you were a part of it and or complicit on some level. Like you need Joe Clark from Lean On Me to come in and be like, take the chains off the door, take the chains off the door. The enemy is here. And
so when you convinced me that that was an impossibility, then the focus fell on the one external candidate that I believed, which was very far outside the box, could be possible. So then you and I started talking about,
and it made so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, okay. So if you're looking at, so we knew it couldn't be somebody who was at a school already, because if it were somebody who was at an institution already, then somebody from their institution would have leaked the fact that they were leaving. Like, so it wasn't, so we knew it was somebody who was not currently at a school, right? That it had to be.
Which makes it funny because you and I were discussing who it could or could not be, the president of the University of Ohio resigned. And I was like, uh-oh, like this throws a wrench in everything, because it was happening. And an hour before the press conference, the president of the University of Ohio stepped down. And I was like, wait, what's this? And then he put out an announcement saying that he was stepping down to remain a professor at University of Ohio. And I was like, okay, because that probably would have thrown me off the scent big time.
Yeah. And when we actually said the name. Kliakoff probably 20-30 minutes before that tweet was sent, like 20 or 30 minutes. And then it was like, wait, hold up. Okay, let's, and then we circled back to him after eliminating other candidates. And it just made so much sense. It was like, okay, this is a man who has been in the sports gaming business. He has been in the,
involved with the WNBA.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been involved. He was the head of a virtual reality company.
Yes. So he's forward
helped
thinking.
He helped invent Hulu.
Yes.
And launch it. He's part of Real Player. He's been associated with the NBA. He is a mega sports fan. And we'll get into my Twitter reconnaissance on this guy in a little bit, but I mean, he's posted photos with, you know, himself at Rangers games and Giants games and Yankees games. He posted a photo with himself watching an NBA Finals game with David Stern, like sitting with David Stern watching the NBA Finals. So, I mean, this is a dude who's been all over sports for a really long time. I went back and listened to several interviews that he gave about different events that would take place in Las Vegas, because, you know, like the who did Tyson Fury fight? Wilder?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, so I listened to a podcast where he talked about bringing in Fury Wilder 2 to fight at the MGM Grand. He is somebody who is very, very up to date on what is popular inside and out of sports, but obviously sports is the most important thing for the Pac-12 conference, but so is business and so is pop culture and so is technology.
Yeah. And that's where I think that he is going to, I thought that this was a home run hire. I thought that this was about as good as you could get. I mean, cause you got a guy who is not only competent, but he's done the job. Like, he's going to be forward thinking. He's not going to stay in the box and say, oh, well, this is how we've always done it at the conference. And he's not going to be reactionary. because he understands and knows that there's a huge cost to waiting. And he's put together huge deals for Hulu, for with MGM, with other companies he's been involved with. So this is a man who gets it. You know what I mean? Like, and I look forward to seeing the types of things that he's going to do for the conference to increase the availability of the conference and to figure out who he's going to partner with. So what did your Twitter reconnaissance lead you to?
Well, first of all, Larry Scott was not on social media, which is something that you and I bemoaned repeatedly, because you don't have to read your mentions, but having a venue and an avenue with which to communicate with people directly is incredibly important. You should be where the people are. Like, and the fact, and it just reinforced the fact that he couldn't get the conference's games in front of people. He couldn't even get himself in front of people. Like, it was absolutely absurd. Like, he would have gotten a lot of hate and his mentions would have been a dumpster fire. But I also think that if he was the type of person to get out there and face the music, then he would have been the type of person that actually held himself accountable for some of the decisions that he made. And so, you know, we went from somebody who didn't have social media to George Kliavkov, who has been on Twitter as long as you and I have, George.
I got on February 2009.
Yeah, I was finding tweets from him like 2009, 2010, for sure. Oh, and see, he was one of those guys. I think I'm going to be dead honest with you. He seems like the kind of guy, like Boss Baby. You ever watch that show, Boss Baby? Like, yeah. He was born in a suit and tie. He's been an executive his entire life. He's had gray hair since he was 11 years old, and he's just been running shit. Like, that's how he comes off to me. And his Twitter was really interesting to me because there was a bunch of people who I joined up with around the same time and joined Twitter. And there were a few different types of tweeters in the very beginning. There was the, I'm on this for 3 days because it's interesting and never tweeted again. There was those people. There was the, I'm here for sports and I'm only going to talk about sports and that's what we're doing. There were trolls from the get-go. There were trolls. And then there were people who were there to start to build their brand. And the other one, which I never really followed a lot of these people because I didn't see a lot of use for it, was there were the people who came on as sort of like entrepreneurs, and they used social media in such a way that they tweeted out like one or two things a day. It was almost always a news link to one of the major stories of the day with just the headline. Like, they didn't really ever add any flavor or anything themselves or any personality. And some of the people I know, I got a friend who's a CEO of a company down in Arizona, who he had signed actually up for a service, which tweeted for him twice a day with two of the most talked about tech stories of the day. So you would just see his name on your timeline twice a day, but he actually never logged on to Twitter or got any engagement. And that's what George Kliavkov's Twitter for, I'm talking years, I'm talking 2009 all the way through right now, most of his tweets were just that, like, here's the top tech story of the day. And every once in a great while, a little bit of commentary of like, I read this, it was interesting.
Yeah.
But maybe once every 5 or 6 days, he would fire off a tweet. And it was usually like, I'm traveling and this is where I'm at. or University of Virginia basketball would be playing. And he'd be like, Grayson Allen's a bitch. Duke sucks. Virginia Tech's the worst college on the planet. And it's like, oh my God, this dude's a sports fan. Like, this guy, and you really got that feeling of like, oh, this, he went to University of Virginia. He's invested in his alma mater. And this dude hates Virginia Tech. Like, I got that a lot from his Twitter. Also, that he was a big NBA fan and that he would tweet about pop culture stuff every once in a while. But for the most part, George, for a guy who's been on Twitter for 12, 13 years, and you know, if he tweeted some dumb shit, I would find it.
Yes.
Oh, I found maybe three tweets. I don't know if you want me to tell you what they are. But I found maybe three tweets in his history that are like, what do you mean? Oh, those
of
are
course I
bad.
Want you to tell us.
Okay.
Wait. It's already out there. So then, and you already know people are already doing the digging. So you might as well go ahead and say it.
Absolutely wild decision by the Pac-12 to not have him scrub his Twitter, though. Like, for the fact that this dude is as vanilla as he is, completely wild of the Pac-12 to not have this guy protect his account or delete his tweets.
Okay,
that is insane to me.
What do we have?
Okay, I'll give you the tweets. There's probably two or three of them, and I actually did a top 10 list of my favorite old tweets of his on my Twitter, and I'll run you through those in a second because I just want to get your reaction to them. But questionable tweet number one basically said the Second Amendment was ratified in 1791. It's time to revisit old rules.
That doesn't sound that crazy.
To possibly get rid of or amend the Second Amendment? You don't think that would upset people in today's climate?
Of course that would upset people. I don't think that's worth deleting.
Okay. Dude, I don't even know if this second one, if I should say it out loud. Hold on. I'm going to.
Oh, my God.
I'm dead serious, George.
The first one was a non-issue. It's like.
You think it's a non-issue, but you're open to discuss anything. You would be fine if it had said, like, we need to double the Second Amendment, if it was just had come out of nowhere. But all right, I'm going to text you this second one while we're talking to see.
Okay.
Because you know me, as out there as I am, I still want to make sure that I'm not okay. Here we go. Texting it now, and you have to think about this tweet in the context of everything that I've told you about what I found out about his Twitter.
Oh God. They should have made him delete that Twitter. But I'm not mad at it. Like, he's a sports fan. Bro.
would you have tweeted something like that if it included somebody from University of Washington?
What's
the date on this tweet? What's the date on this tweet that I sent you?
Okay, I have to be honest. First thing, it doesn't have the date on it.
Hopefully he's deleted it by now.
So here's the thing is, I have retweeted at some point in time probably that meme or somebody in a shirt that says Ted Bundy was a Husky.
Okay, he was also a Ute. He also went to University of Utah. Multiple Pac-12 schools. Could have been your school. Okay, so I found the date on this tweet. Okay. I found the date. November 5th, 2009.
This is why it's important.
That is in the wild west days of Twitter.
And here's the truth is, when I first started working at FS1, and also when my wife was doing a show on Fox called Home Free a few years ago, they literally went through every single former tweet and was like, these are a couple questionable for her or for me. Be like, yo, what? Okay. These are a couple questionable. You want to delete this before the show starts, blah, 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 or not, or anything like that. So those are kinds of things that they normally do. I don't understand why the Pac-12 did not do this. Because that tweet
is... I'm not saying that tweet. I'm not saying it. I'm not going to. Okay. I gave the date, though. If somebody wants to go find it, they can find it. But, like,
it's an objectionable tweet. Well, it's just in poor taste of a sports fan in relation to a tragic event. Okay.
For sure. In the era that we're in right now, it's not racism.
No, it's not racism, because I would have outed his ass for that.
No, I just wish it sucks because there's a lot of like younger people on Twitter right now who would have been like 11, 12 years old in 2009.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually in their 20s have been beat up for the stuff that they tweeted when they were like 14, 15 years old. That's a different story. I'm telling you, if your grandmother was on Twitter in 2009, she was tweeting freaky shit. Like 2009. I don't know what it was. Like, I went back, and when you and I were talking the other day about our first tweets, because I went and searched your first tweets and my first tweets, I went through, because 2009 was when I jumped on. I went through, and I was like, who is this? Like, reading my own tweets. Like, I don't know who this man is.
Yeah, well,
I have no – and none of them were even, like, objectionable. It was just like, I think I hate this person, whoever this was. They're corny. Stupid.
That's why Mark Cuban suggests that everybody should delete their tweets every 3 months. That you should have, that they should be, that they should detonate. That yes, people can screenshot them, but they need to detonate after every three, six months.
All right. So here's the third tweet, and it's not actually one tweet, it's several. And it's actually before 2015, which makes it even more interesting. Every once in a while, this dude, George Kliavkov, would just take a dump on Donald Trump. Like, he just would, he would just make fun of him. But that's what a lot of people, because if you don't remember Donald Trump before he ran for president.
Doesn't that make him fit in the Pac-12, though?
I think it definitely makes him fit in the Pac-12. And even during Trump's presidency, you can see that there's a lot of tweets. No favorites, which is the wildest thing about George Kliavkov's Twitter account, is he's never liked a single tweet ever.
They might have gotten rid of the favorites. They might have actually done the favorites.
But why would they get rid of the favorites? And so I don't know. That one was wild. But and then why leave the old tweets? But he did kind of he would retweet stuff that mostly was like John Stewart or John Oliver or comedians making jokes about Donald Trump.
Yeah,
it's pretty common stuff. But he did take a few shots at Donald Trump, which I feel like also all of Twitter was doing before 2015.
Correct. Yes.
Like, Donald Trump was one of Twitter's biggest. This is going to sound weird because there's people who listen to this podcast that are conservative. There's people who listen to this podcast that are MAGA supporters. You have to understand, Donald Trump, before he ever ran for president, was his entire goal was to keep your name on his mind, which a lot of people have copied that sort of way that he branded himself to just stay in the news cycle. He would comment on every pop culture issue. And a lot of his comments on pop culture issues were really similar to the thing he did the other day when he called the Kentucky Derby horse that won Medina Spirit, when he called it a junkie.
Yeah.
So, like, calling a horse a junkie was very 2014, 2013 Donald Trump on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, that was just super common. And so a lot of George Kliavkov's tweets, and I'm sure if you look up my tweets from 2012, 2013, they would also be making fun of some of the stuff that Donald Trump was saying back then. But I mean, he's definitely on the left side politically, but it wasn't like extreme, like super activist liberalism that was coming out of his Twitter. It was all pretty vanilla. But those are the things that stood out. But I did make a top 10 list. I'm going to run you through them, George. I want to see what you think. Okay, so here's the thread. Larry Scott didn't have a Twitter, so it's kind of fun. The Pac-12 hired someone who's been on here from the beginning. A thread of my top 10 favorite old tweets of new Pac-12 commissioner George Kliavkov. Number 10, LeBron greater than Jordan. And this tweet says he was tweeting a video from Bill Laimbeer, who is the head coach of the Las Vegas Aces, who George managed or was president. Whatever his association with the Aces is, I need to look further into. But he said, Coach Laimbeer, the Aces, dropping some knowledge. Bill Laimbeer, LeBron is the GOAT over MJ and is better at involving his teammates to win. What do you think of that, George?
Don't hate it. Would enjoy the conversation.
All right. Number 9, the commish likes Macklemore. This is a tweet from 2013. He said, listen to Thrift Shop by Macklemore at LAX. Great way to wake up. Quote, I wear your granddad's clothes. I look incredible. Unquote.
Yo, Thrift Shop was a hell of a record, dude. I'm gonna pop some tags. $20. Yeah,
Macklemore was the victim. Macklemore was the victim of people who didn't listen to rap liking his stuff more than some of the greatest albums of all time that came out that year.
Correct.
Exactly. Other than that, he's fine.
And that was the thing that actually hurt him more than anything, is that people, it was almost like the Iggy Azalea effect, that
for sure,
that they were so hot. So at first, and then people were like, hold on, you're dissing the good stuff. And then that made people turn on them like they were the people who did it.
Some of the albums that came out that year remind me very much of Christian McCaffrey not winning the Heisman. Yeah. It's just like, how could you not? Okay, number eight, George Kliavkov, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2010. Dancing in the VIP at LeBron and Jay-Z's NBA Two Kings party. This is becoming an annual affair.
Yo, he with the shits, man. He's a sports fan. Dude, I love it. I'm all in on that. That's number one so far to me.
All right. Number seven. Randomly invited to celebrate Jackie Chan's 60th birthday with him at our hotel in Beijing. And it's a picture of him and Jackie Chan with a Rachel Maddow haircut.
Okay, dude. He's name dropping too much now. Okay, go on.
All right. Number six, May 2nd, 2011. And I said that the commish is telling Leno monologue jokes. Again, this is 2011. Is Donald Trump going to demand Osama bin Laden's long form death certificate? That's the new commissioner of the Pac-12. Okay. Telling jokes on the Twitter. This is a good one. June 12th, 2010. Watching old people dance reminds me that young people don't know how to dance. I considered that like an anti-twerking tweet.
Yes, for sure. Or like not understanding any of the new TikTok dance crazes, even though that was way before TikTok.
It also, I was like, wait, was George Kliavkov doing the waltz at Jay-Z's Two Kings party?
Right.
What is he talking about?
He's doing mashed potato in a twist.
All right. Number four, the commish is pro rivalry and hates the Hokies. And this is just like a series of tweets minus one very bad one that I left out. Beating Virginia Tech is James Madison's best work since the Federalist Papers. The only thing better than Virginia Tech losing is when they lose painfully, like being beat by Boise State in the last minute 20. The 19 varsity teams at Virginia Tech, and he tagged them, still have won a total of zero NCAA championships. That was in 2018. Virginia Tech loses to UNC and the Yankees win, a perfect sports night. The Yankees win, UVA won, Virginia Tech lost. All around, a great day.
You think he likes Virginia? Oh, that means he's a fan of your boy.
Bryce Perkins. Yeah. Former Pac-12 quarterback, Bryce Perkins. And he's probably not a fan of former University of Arizona quarterback, Connor Brewer.
Yep.
For him doing nothing at University of Virginia.
And okay, he's probably a big fan. He was probably a big fan of Braxton Burmeister, though.
George, literally anybody compared to you is a big fan of Braxton Burmeister. You hate that kid.
I don't hate him. He's just a bad quarterback.
Okay, moving on. Number three, the commish hates your pets. Which is really interesting because if you look at his most recent tweet, it's like a video of him with two of his dogs. But he tweeted this, oh gosh, how long ago was this? This is like a 2011 tweet. So maybe he's grown. Can someone please build an Instagram plugin that removes pictures of kittens and puppies from my feed? I'd happily invest.
Dude, I'm not a cat guy, dude. Not a cat guy at all.
I'm not a cat guy, but kittens aren't cats. Just like puppies aren't dogs. Kittens and puppies make the day better. Just pictures of them everywhere.
No, kittens, no. Absolutely not.
You really think a kitten and a cat are the same thing?
Yes. It does a kitten grow to be a cat?
But if you say it grows to be a cat, then it's not a cat.
It's a cat. It's a tiny cat. It's a baby cat. It's a baby cat, Ralph. Why,
right, but it's a baby. It's a baby. I don't like people very much.
Another bad take, dude.
This isn't a bad take.
On par with Reese's.
I don't like human beings very much. I love them. I love them. I have compassion for them. I don't like them all that much. I don't mind keeping to myself, but I love every baby in the entire world. Are you going to tell me a baby and the guy who owned my house before me, who left it in shambles, are the same thing? They are not. Kittens and cats. We'll save that for a take for Twitter. Kittens and cats are not the same. Okay, number two. I wrote, there's a really good chance the commission knows this conference was run very poorly. And I included two tweets in this. One is a picture of a truck that had driven into an overhead pass and was stuck under it. And on the side of the truck that had been wrecked into the overhead pass, it says, on the road to success, there are no shortcuts. And he captioned it and said, this says it all, which I think is important for what he's about to embark on with the Pac-12. And then the second tweet that I attached to it, April 16, 2011, both traditional and inherently disruptive businesses involve identifying and either exploiting or fixing inefficiencies. I love that tweet. That tweet makes me happy.
That makes me very happy.
And then the number one greatest old tweet of new Pac-12 commissioner George Klihavkov.
How was the last one not number one? That was awesome.
Okay, well, this is the best old tweet I've ever seen. The streak stands at one, and Grayson Allen is the most unsportsmanlike crybaby choker in Duke history.
I love it, dude. I love it, and I 100% agree with it. I stand by the commissioner. I stand by the commissioner. Everybody hates Grayson.
Can you imagine like Larry Scott like getting on Twitter for the first time out of nowhere in 2016 in spring 2016, and he was like, "Hey, I just want everyone to know Grayson Allen's a bitch." Dude. Like, I can't imagine it. And just knowing that, like, this is not going to change. This man hates Grayson Allen, and he's the commissioner of the Pac-12, and he's not going to not hate Grayson Allen. Like, you don't just stop hating your least favorite player ever.
Yeah.
Dude, do you think if I got a job at the New York Times as, like, the editor-in-chief tomorrow – that if somebody asked me about Karl Malone inside, I wouldn't be like, ooh.
Dude, you are on permanent. All right. So there is Karl Malone, and there is, oh my gosh, there's something else that you hate too. I can't remember what it is. It is, oh my gosh, it was just something that just came up. Oh, well, forget it.
Not certainly not kittens like you.
Yeah. No, cats.
Pineapples. Pineapples are the worst thing of all time.
Lies.
I would take Karl Malone as a roommate over eating one pineapple.
Wow. Stop. Okay, so here are some quotes from the new commissioner in his press conference. So in response to a question about women's basketball, Klihavkov said, "We know where our bread is buttered. We're focused on the revenue sports and winning in football and men's basketball." Is that a good reply?
Yes. People are sensitive. And if you chop that quote up to just its own thing without any context, I could see how somebody would be like, "We matter too," because a lot of the smaller sports, non-revenue generating sports, and women's sports in general feel neglected oftentimes.
Yes, especially if you see what just happened with the golf championship.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And we'll get into that next week. And I guess kudos to Barstool for stepping in, but okay. So you already have a bunch of them that feel like they're behind, even though in the Pac-12, I don't necessarily think that that's the case. If Larry Scott did anything, it was make the little sports feel like they mattered, right?
There's nothing wrong with making them feel like they matter, but you have to nurture the like you must nurture your most important thing, because it actually it would be like if it were the last tree on earth, right? And yeah. But you're worried about planting flowers instead of nurturing the tree, so then everybody can breathe. Like the carbon dioxide, oxygen, all this stuff that goes to the tree, out of the tree, is more important than the flowers, and will actually keep the flowers and the people running around alive.
1,000,000%, I agree with you. It does create a very odd question for me, and I'm going to throw it out there. I'm read as much as I can, and I've watched as much as I can on this, but... Is there any chance that Larry Scott's propensity to put some of these lesser known sports out front and give them attention in the way that he did foiled the long standing fraud that was going on? Or do you think that just would have blown up in everybody's face anyway?
I don't understand what you mean.
So under Larry Scott's tenure, a lot of these smaller sports like rowing, tennis, and others, like, they were involved in the fraud from like Lori Loughlin and stuff like that.
The Varsity Blues thing.
So it just makes me wonder if the Pac-12 smaller sports had stayed under the radar, if there would have been less of an opportunity to find out about the wide scale fraud, even though I know that the fraud actually spanned nationwide and involved Ivy leagues and stuff like that. But that you talking about it just brought it up in my head for a second. I was like, wait a minute. Did Larry Scott being good at one aspect of his job actually cause a greater embarrassment for the conference?
Oh,
like,
no.
Was he really stepping on that many ricks?
Right. That would be incredible. Here's another quote. When asked about the Pac-12's weakness as a conference, which is a legitimate question. So actually, the Pac-12 people actually asked good questions. He responded, "If we're being honest, it's the number of years since the Pac-12 has won a football or men's basketball championship. And the answer to that would be 17 and 24 years. I loved his honesty there. I absolutely loved it because that's the anti-Larry Scott-ish answer. He would have said, if you had asked Larry Scott that same question, he'd be like, weakness. We've won more championships in this conference than any other conference, and the women's softball just won at UCLA, and Stanford just won in women's basketball. We are still working and aiming to get football better, but the conference, there is no weakness here right now. We're continuing to work on some areas that we're not quite as strong at though.
He strikes me very much as somebody who would not have come out and said that it's better to appear in a bowl game than win it, which is something that Larry Scott implied in front of all of the media, which was very bizarre. He strikes as somebody who would not pass the buck on the question that I asked him at the last Pac-12 media day at Hollywood and Highland, which is, hey, most of the states in which you have colleges have legalized marijuana. Is it possible that the NCAA's overall penalty for dealing with some of these things doesn't actually apply to this conference? And do you need to do something to step in and make sure that you actually reflect the values of the states that you have schools in? And his answer to that question was, we like how diverse our conference is. Somebody who would not just give that bullshit answer.
Let's do a control then. When we're at Pac-12 Media Day in 2021, let's make sure he asked that same question.
I mean, it'll certainly make sense.
Yeah, that he gets asked that same exact question. I love it. Another quote about the TV contracts. For the final negotiations, I will be involved. And okay, before I finish reading it, there's one word that scares me in this sentence.
Scares every Pac-12 fan.
You already know what I'm gonna say, huh?
Oh, 100%.
So
it's the only C word that's worse than the actual C word.
See you next Tuesday. for the final negotiations, I will be involved, but I think it's smart to hire a consultant. I was like, dude, that's like buzzword to me. Like, he didn't say consultant, did he? No.
That's PTSD. That's PTSD because when Larry Scott said consultant, he meant Vinny from Queens, who he owed money to. He didn't mean like, he didn't mean expert, which is what consultant means. Like, consultants are a really good thing. It's not just an expenditure. They save you money. They save you money. Like, I'm right now, my wife wants to demo the entire kitchen of the home that we bought. And we can't because everything else is falling apart. So we're trying to catch up those things. But like, but I was thinking, and it was, I felt like I grew up a little bit thinking about this. And it was like, some of this we can do on our own. And I can hire somebody to remodel our whole kitchen, or I can hire somebody to do the stuff that we definitely can't do. But I'm sure that there's somebody out there who would take 5 or 6 hours out of their day for a discounted rate that is an expert in home repair and home renovation and kitchen design, who would consult. And if they were able to consult with me for a few hours about the things that I could do on my own, and I paid them for their time, then on the back end, I might save $7,000 to $10,000, exactly, even though the consultation was an expenditure. That's how consulting work is supposed to work. And I know we have listeners who are consultants that could have explained that in a much better way than I could. But most people in their day-to-day lives don't deal with consultants. They genuinely feel like it is a cronyistic way to make up for your own deficiencies as a leader, because their experience of consultants is the movie Elf, when James Caan asks his writers what they should do to come up with a new children's book. And their solution is what, George?
Hire another writer.
Miles Finch.
Yes. Yes.
We bring in Miles Finch. Like, that's what most people look at and they see is like, oh, like it's just a measure of inefficiency. But no, if you're smart and you bring in a consultant to show you how you can save or make money, then it's a benefit. The problem was John Wilner and John Canzano kept like tying all of these guys getting consultant fees from the Pac-12 to like old school lunch photos from Larry Scott's elementary school days. Like, it just was super, super cronyistic, and it ruined a lot of people's faith in the system. I'm not as alarmed by that statement as most people, I think.
No, I had, but it is the PTSD though. Like,
oh, I made it. It's the palpitations.
Yeah. So here is another thing that, according to Oregon President Michael Shill, that the Pac-12 is not committed to keeping the headquarters in the Bay Area beyond the current lease. And, quote, we don't feel strongly that it needs to be there.
That's such a weird thing to say. Like, George, if your wife came home and you had set your workout clothes on top of like the toilet seat lid, and she told you, hey, can you throw those in the hamper? And you replied, I don't feel strongly that my clothes need to remain where they're at.
You're like, oh, so you agreed that they should be thrown in the hamper, right? That was like an interesting way that Michael Shill was like, no, it shouldn't be there, but I'm going to give you an answer that just sounds so ridiculous that it answers the question, but it's also so nebulous that you're going to have to read it 5 times to was that a double negative or a single negative? So I think that was funny because that was like corporate speak for like, fuck no, we don't think it should be there. That's stupid. He was like, we don't feel strongly that it needs to be there.
Like, yeah.
That means that it's moving to Vegas, probably.
Right. Where, and that was what was funny was when they hired somebody from Vegas, the primary response was, "We're going to Vegas."
Yes.
People immediately thought that's what would happen.
Why wouldn't you? Your conference championships are played in Vegas. In football and in basketball. So it makes sense. Like, land is cheaper in Vegas. I mean, it's literally probably the amount of space that they can get is 8 times probably whatever it would cost in San Francisco, which is probably the most expensive city in the country. It's a disaster, dude. It's a disaster.
So, I don't know if you've gotten to the quote yet about expanding the college football playoff, but that was jarring to hear out of the gate, don't you think?
No, I didn't think it was jarring. I thought it was smart. Like, so hold up, let me find the quote. Oh, he said that his personal success in this conference is tied to the success of the athletic directors and coaches. I like that. And he said the struggling Pac-12 networks are, quote unquote, part of the future of the conference's distribution strategy. And he said, we have to get the Pac-12 network distributed on every place, on every platform. That is numero uno. That means Hulu TV, YouTube TV, DirecTV, Roku TV, Apple TV, every TV that there is, the Pac-12 needs to be there. And what he about, gets it.
Because my mom went to University of Wyoming, so I've got some allegiance there, at least while I still owe Arizona State University $70,000 for a literature degree. But I definitely follow and root for University of Wyoming in all things. And a couple of years back, they put their games on Facebook. And so did like University of Hawaii and a couple of other Mountain West schools. Like, they streamed their games.
Yep.
Would you be open to that?
I think that there are other options, right? That's my only thing is that
even if you started small, even if you said like,
oh,
we want you to be paying these cable companies and streaming providers.
Yeah, but you can get revenue from Facebook. Like, if you do a Facebook, like you can sell your commercials to the Facebook advertising. So that's definitely an option for the Pac-12 networks. I'm actually very interested to see how he's going to expand the access there. I couldn't find the college football playoff tweet again, but
he just said we're expanding now. Like, we are absolutely from the gate advocating for the expansion of the college football playoff. Amen. To make sure all power conferences are included is my assumption.
Absolutely. Read them the Canzano quote from earlier.
Let's see.
You know what I'm talking about? When you were telling me what Canzano said and then what the reply was to it?
Oh, you mean the Utah fan?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. That means that Oregon President Michael Schill told John Canzano that when you're looking for someone like the commissioner, it's about values. We all share the same values. We care deeply about our students. We care about winning, but we care about winning the right way. And a Utah fan quote tweeted the quote that Canzano put out there from Michael Schill. And he said, I don't give a shit about winning the right way. And I hope this guy doesn't either.
Do you care about winning the right way?
It's context, right? Like, I don't want a Houston Astros scandal. Do you?
No.
Like, I don't want anything to do with anything like that, but I certainly like it. Having somebody who would like have to pretend to be upset that Oregon got into the college football playoff via selection committee over a team that like 85% of the general population believed should actually be ranked higher, kind of like back when you were playing and you thought you should be playing in the national championship, and so did most people, but it didn't work out that way according to the BCS. Like, I think the overarching thing is you don't want a commissioner who would come out and be like, we understand people's frustration. You want a commissioner who would come out and be like, too bad.
Yes, like, exactly. Exactly. Like, yeah, sorry. Absolutely not. This is not going to work. And he doesn't strike me as a guy that would just take any old thing. You know what I mean? That if it's not going the right way for the conference, that he's just going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's fine. No biggie.
Can I ask you if you're worried about his record of job hopping? Because if he was a coach, that's a thing we would be talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, see,
2.5 years at a VR company, okay. 2.5 years at MGM. One of the years the MGM couldn't even operate.
There are. I was reading a business book from a successful guy, and he was talking about that there are two different types of CEOs, right? Occasionally, these overlap. They talked about there are wartime CEOs and there are peacetime CEOs. He may be a wartime CEO, you know, a guy who comes in, he fixes problems, and then he may not stay for, you know, past his one term. Like, he may want to be somewhere else, but then truly, he's a sports fan, right? So doesn't he, like, he wants to be involved in sports. Like, yeah, he had opportunities to at the MGM, but now imagine him getting an opportunity to, you know, be literally involved hands-on in building something great in sports. I think that, and then also along with the paycheck too, is probably pretty appetizing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so one of the things in searching for his name in mentions of his name in the year before all this happened, that he was named, there was a lot of stuff that when he was named MGM CEO, that people came out of the woodwork and said, like, oh, I used to work with this guy at such and such. He's great. And it's that sort of like random votes of confidence on the internet directed at nobody in particular that I find to be encouraging. He doesn't strike me as a guy who would schedule a conference call that everyone thinks is going to have to do with the idea that they struck a deal with DirecTV to announce that he got a contract extension.
No, I don't think he would call a press conference for that at all. He would want to drop that into, like, you know, hey, guys, we gave everybody bonuses. FYI, I'll be here a couple more years.
Yeah, he strikes me as the type of guy who would call a all-hands-on-deck conference call with the entire Pac-12 just to tell them that the Yankees won on the same day that Virginia Tech lost.
Yes. Exactly. Well, you guys, this has been the emergency episode of the Pac-12 Apostles. George Kilikoff is the new commissioner. The Wicked Witch is gone. I don't want to wish dead on Larry Scott, but his tenure is dead. And hopefully this is the new beginnings of, you know, something great. We can have hope. This is like the NFL draft for the conference. So I'm excited, and I'm, you know, I'm raring to go, Ralph.
Yeah, let's do it. We all collectively this day hate Grayson Allen.
All right. Peace out. Catch you guys next episode.